It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Well, it's been a few months. Everybody have a good summer?
Yeah.
Some of us better than others.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's been nice.
Why don't we go around the table, talk about what everybody did. Why don't we start with you, Brad? How was your summer?
It's been all right. I sent my kid to school, got a new puppy to replace him. What's going on with you, Jason?
So around mid-April, I went on a nice diet and lost about 70 pounds. Recently, I have kind of, I won't say fallen off the diet, but I haven't been as strict and put a dozen or so pounds back on. So overall, I'm still down 57 or 58 pounds. And last week, I started taking Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu classes.
Full-on Joe Rogan.
Going for the Jason Young experience there.
Yeah, what about you, Jim? How's your summer been?
It's been pretty eventful, uneventful, rather. We did take a trip to Mississippi for a couple of days, but other than that, it's been home. We've got the new puppy in, I don't know, right around when the whole COVID mess started in March, and so we've enjoyed having the new puppy. She's 6 months old, and right before the podcast, I realized she had chewed up one of my real nice Brandon Bill hats, so that was awful. But otherwise, about the same old stuff here. I'm working from home. I'm on a new project at work, so working a lot, and that's it.
Really. You left something really important out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure the transition from girlfriend to spouse, but, you know, maybe that's not important in your summer.
No, I thought we had recorded since then. I'm sorry. I was like, are my dates off? So yes, I did get married on June 6th. This summer. I thought we had recorded since then.
Oh, we have. We recorded June 24th, I think.
Yeah, that episode may not have made it out. Anyway, keep going.
Okay, so yeah, so I got married on June 6th to my lovely bride, Megan, and we did buy a new place to live a couple months before that. So yeah, making a home. We got a new puppy, and it's going great.
Awesome. What about you, Josh?
Well, my summer... you know, even with all the pandemic stuff going along, there's no off days in the car business, so it's been kind of business as usual there. We also got a puppy, got a little cowboy corgi, as they call him, half corgi, half Australian heeler, that has decided to get a taste for everything. But he's grown like a weed and has the energy of a full pit bull and thinks he's a pit bull most of the time.
But Mr. Worldwide, no.
Yeah, right, exactly. If he starts screaming Dolly all through the house, I'm really going to be scared. But, you know, other than that, just kind of a rather a weird summer, kind of a nice 5-6 month summer for Hope and the kids with them being all in school. So, Brian, how did your summer go?
Well, I learned how to lose 40 pounds in 2.5 weeks. It's called having a heart attack, widowmaker heart attack, with a pulmonary embolism and having a tube shoved down your throat for 2.5 weeks while you're in a coma. And just the weight just comes right off, as well as any muscle you've put on. Wouldn't recommend it. So I had a bit of a rough summer. Things were going good till about the end of July. I don't remember much of August. Thanks to the pandemic, no one could visit me in the hospital, including my wife. So I sort of felt like I was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for about 5 weeks. I felt sort of like a lunatic in an asylum for about 5 weeks. But I only had like a 15 to 20% chance of living. And not only did I live, I'm walking around. Now, of course, people who have listened to the previous 100 or so episodes of our podcast are going to go, Brian, you sound a little bit different. Yeah, my vocal cords may have had some damage. We don't know yet. It may take some time to sort out. I also had a collapsed lung. I just found that out today, a partially collapsed lung. Pulmonary combination, I believe they call it. Pulmonary combination. It's not good. So we're trying to figure that out. So I went in with a heart attack, and I feel like they just beat me with baseball bats. Repeatedly until I woke up. So,
up.
I was going to say, I mean, I know you're a competitive dude, but you didn't have to do all that to, you know, beat our stories for the summer.
I am so extra, I'm going to have to end up dying twice before it's all done. So, wasn't good enough to just let all my organs shut down. I had to come back.
Welcome back, sir. We missed you.
I appreciate it.
Yes, welcome back.
I'm still glad to be amongst the living, you know, fortunately, I was able, you know, very quickly to be able to walk around, and I still have all my marbles and all my memories, and I'm doing relatively well. But it's probably going to be a long road to recovery. I've got a few months ahead of me to get right. So fortunately, I work for a great employer. It's very, very understanding, and they're working with me on that. And I've got a team of specialists that I'm going to see for every single thing that's wrong, especially since I'm maxed out, and it's already cost a few million to keep me alive between two different hospitals and weeks in the ICU. But I'm still here, and we're still able to talk about Apple stuff, so I'm real happy about that.
Thank God for stop-loss insurance.
So you're quite literally the million-dollar man.
I am the multi-million-dollar man. I am about between 2 and 3 million, I think, right now. I think the last I checked. You know, those are all inflated American healthcare dollars, but yeah, it's when they send you your bill in the mail and you look at it, it's like an old school phone book, and you're just going through it, and they don't even put a sum at the end. You have to just kind of do the math in your head as you go, and it's like, wow. So, but yeah, you know, trying to keep on the bright side and just work through therapies and wait for things to start working again. Okay, but enough of that crap. Let's talk about what happened this week. We had our first Apple announcement in, I don't know, months and months and months. No phones, but Apple Watches. So who wants to kick us off and talk about the Apple Watches?
Well, Apple did announce, they announced two new watches, and they have the Series 6, which the big thing with the Series 6 is the blood oxygen sensor that checks it in, what, I think 15 seconds is what they said. That model will start off at $399. And that comes out on Friday, September 18th. They also announced the somewhat rumored SE that has the guts of an S5, but it does not have the always-on display, and it starts at $279. It also comes out on Friday, the 18th. And for some reason, they're still keeping around the Series 3 as well, which is starting at $200, and I don't think cellular is an option on it. I don't remember. But they've got the three watches in the lineup, and of course they also had the new bands. They had the new plastic band that's kind of the one single loop that I guess you kind of have to stretch to get across your wrist, and then they also released the what was the nylon band, I believe it was, that was of the same type, but it's also just a single loop all the way across. And from what I understand, a number of y'all ordered you some new watches this week.
We certainly did. So as somebody who has to rely on a pulse oximeter pretty heavily right now, I'm having to check my O2 levels a lot. I'm very excited about this. I don't like having to put the little thing on my finger because my wife is always chasing me around and don't forget to see if you're hypoxic or not. So I put that on there. So for me, the Series 6 is kind of a no-brainer. I do want that functionality. And if I do sleep with it, that will also give me a good indication of what my oxygen levels are at all times. So I'm really sort of excited about that. You know, a lot of the changes that they've made in this, I don't know how great that they're going to be. The always-on display being much brighter in the sunlight is something that I'm kind of excited about. That's one of the things that I don't like about the Apple Watch historically, is if you're in a bright, sunny area, it's really kind of hard to check, you know, to use your watch as a watch like Jim likes to do. So I'm really hoping.
Until time, you mean.
Exactly. So I'm really hoping that gets a little bit better. We'll talk about the one I ordered in just a minute. The rest of you guys, go ahead and order some of those as well. And what did you get?
Well, so I ordered a pair the same for myself and my wife. We ended up getting the new product red version with the red sport loop with the kind of black trim on the outside. We're big dogs fans around here, and you know, I do like supporting the product red stuff whenever I can. As a matter of fact, we just got my uncle and my mother a product red iPhone SE 2020 model, so that's pretty cool. The things that drove me away from Apple Watch are the things this year that drove me back to Apple Watch, right? So I've been wearing a Garmin Fenix 6S Pro Solar for the last, I don't know, 15 months or so.
Wow, say that three times really fast.
No kidding. I actually had to kind of take it slow to make sure I got it all in there. So pros of that were it had a pulse oximeter. It had always on altitude. It had, now it still crushes it on the battery life. I get 9 or 10 days. But from what I'm hearing from you guys are getting essentially 2 full days on a Series 5. So if I can get 2 days out of the Series 6, I'll be really happy with that. Because of Brian's adventurous summer, I missed the option of having the ECG. My family has a history of heart disease. I have very well controlled high blood pressure on a very low dose, but nonetheless, I still have high blood pressure. So, you know, I want to make sure, you know, I kind of miss the option of fall detection. I kind of miss the option of cellular connectivity. There's just some stuff that I did miss about the Apple Watch, but wasn't enough to get me to go back to it when the Series 5 came out. I'm looking forward to the Series 6. And although we've got 2 ordered, they haven't shipped yet. So if the Apple Store near me tomorrow has some in stock, I may walk out with one from there.
Is our Apple Store open out here, Jason? The one in Alpharetta?
It is.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, they're limiting the number of people that are able to be in there, but it's still a pretty decent amount of people that they're letting in there. And of course, you know, mask is required.
And Jim, what about you? What did you order?
So I got a the aluminum space gray with the dark blue solo loop band. I figured I wanted to try one of those bands. And to me, the best way to try one out, because I already have a bunch of bands that I like, including some, you know, not made by Apple bands that I really like. So instead of paying $50 for a solo loop, you know, I just got one with this watch. So now I have one, and if I like it, I'll get more. But, and so I just generally upgrade every 2 years on the watch. And so I've got still rocking the Series 4. It works just fine, really. This is more of just a, okay, it's time to upgrade. I'm going to do it. It'll be nice to have the pulse ox meter. I do think it will be nice to have the always on display versus mine, which every now and then I look at it. And then, I look kind of like I'm trying to do some funky disco dance where I'm trying to get my watch to come on so I can see the face, you know, my arms going up and down waving. Yeah, that, Brad. It was time. Earlier this summer, I got myself one of them Apple cards and bought a full spread iPad Pro 12.9 with the Magic Keyboard and all that. So I just went ahead and threw the Apple Watch on the payment plan, and I'll pay it off before the whatever 12, 24 months is up. But still, it's, you know, no interest. So it was kind of a no-brainer for me. Mine shows it's not going to ship until like October 15th. So I guess either Apple just doesn't have a lot of these things, or I just ordered late this year. I was going to order right away, but then I decided I wanted that sport loop, and I kind of bummed around not measuring my wrist, because you kind of got to measure your wrist for that, since it's got like 8 or 9 different sizes, something like that. And so finally I was like, I guess I better do that. So yesterday morning, I found the like cloth tape measure around here and measured my wrist and got my order done. So that's why I was a little bit slow. I knew that day that I was going to get one, and I kind of didn't anticipate a huge rush for them. But again, my ship date's now not until October 15th.
Well, so speaking of, circling back to something you said, the always on display, that's kind of been my biggest beef with the Garmin, is it does have an always on display, but it's not an always on backlit display. So if I wake up in the middle of the night, like sometimes I sleep really hard, and so I'll wake up at, you know, 11:30 and think it's, you know, 7 a.m. And sometimes I'll sleep poorly and wake up at, you know, 6:30 and think that it's, you know, 11:30 p.m., right? So checking the time at night in bed is a two-handed job, right? So you have to actually raise your wrist, you know, to be able to see the watch, but then you actually have to click a button to turn the backlight on to be able to see it. So like even on the S4, right, I could just do the raise my wrist and it would enable, but there's no raise your wrist here. And then speaking of bands, I really wanted the braided yarn loop, whatever that one is called. But when I tried to order it for both Kate and I, it would not allow me to add it to cart. So it would allow me to choose the style. It would allow me to choose the size, but it would not allow me to add to cart. So we opted to go with the you know, just sport loop, and figure we'll both eventually get one of the others after we've tried it on in the store.
So same here for me on those. When I tried to go into the custom order option where I was, you know, trying to get the aluminum space gray with, I was going to get the red braided solo loop, and it would let me go through the whole thing and select the whole thing, but then it would never let me, like, you get to the end and they're like out of stock, can't even add it to the cart. So that's why I went ahead and just got the blue solo loop. And I did think of you when I saw that red sport band, because I almost ordered it, because I have misplaced my red product red for my watch. Yeah, that one, Brian. And I can't find it anywhere. And so the new one they have now, it's got black on the outside. Like, it's red and then it's got black on the outside. And I wasn't about to buy that as an Ole Miss fan. You know, that you know, you can't do that. So I was going to get that braided solo loop. So now I just went back blue again.
What about you, Brad or Josh? Did you take the plunge on any of the Apple Watches?
I didn't buy it yet. I was thinking about getting my wife iPad Air, but she wants to see them in the store. So our Apple store is not open yet, open to back up yet. But I know Best Buy will probably get them display in probably next week or the week after. So we'll go check them out. And because she does like her iPad Pro, but she has a first generation iPad Pro. So it's 5 years old now. And she's said that she doesn't use it enough simply because it's too big. So I was like, well, you'll get the power, you know, it'll be more powerful than the one you have, and then it'll be, you know, 2 inches smaller. So I think she'll appreciate that. And, you know, she is kind of like you, Brian, in that she wants a laptop replacement, you know. So I think using the Magic Keyboard and the pencil and, you know, the trackpad with that comes with the Magic Keyboard would be a good fit for her.
It's a game changer. I've had mine for right about a month now, and I love that keyboard. The trackpad on there, when I first got it, I didn't even touch it. It's like you're just so used to reaching up and touching the screen and moving it around. But then, like, I don't know, like a day or two in, I just kind of started, oh, well, let's try this out. And I started using that trackpad on there, and yeah, it's really nice to have the trackpad on the Magic Keyboard with the iPad. We hadn't talked about those iPads yet, but I wanted to throw out, I just pulled up the page to just, like, order the braided solo loop, and those things are $100, not $50. So $99.
Why are they so much? Because they're just braided?
Because they're braided, I guess.
More magic goes into the manufacturing of it?
I kind of assumed it was braided in, like, vision only. Like, it's just kind of molded into what looks like braids instead of molded into that flat, you know, surface like the other ones. But maybe it's actually a bunch of small pieces braided together. I guess I'll have to check them out in the store, because $100, I definitely want to see one before I bought one of these now, because, you know, I was just like, hey, I'll just go get me one of those braided loops.
That seems like a lot for a silicone band.
Yeah.
Well, I also saw where they came down on the price on the Milanese loop. Those are now $99.
Much better deal than what it was before, I suppose. I think it was, what, $200 before? Or $150?
I think
it was $150.
Well, one of them was $150 and the other was $199.
Space Black, I think, was $199.
Yep, it was.
So I went ahead and took the plunge. I went with the Apple Watch Edition Titanium, which is what I did for the Series 5. And I don't know. I like the titanium a lot. The product red was really tempting. It really was. But like with Jim, we talked about on Telegram.
Yeah.
it doesn't go with everything, and black goes with everything. So that's the thing that was kind of like, that was
with the watch. You can change the band and to be whatever you want: red, blue, black, green, whatever. But the watch face, the watch itself, if I went with a red watch or a blue watch, which I really, really wanted, then, you know, I wouldn't be able to switch the bands as easily. You know, I wouldn't, just because I'm OCD about that. So, yeah, I wanted that red or blue watch. I actually told my wife that I have to get both the red watch and the blue watch so I can just have them to swap in and out.
I kind of felt the same way, but that was like excessive even for me. So,
yeah. Brian, you're so Brian,
get a
you're
red one and a blue one and wear them like swatches.
Brian, you're saying that you took a Cavalier, you only live twice attitude and got the titanium.
There you go. That was my coming back from the dead gift to myself, was the titanium edition with, and of course that only comes with cellular. It's not GPS only, but that's fine. So let's talk about that SE for just a minute, that watch SE. Kind of weird that it's, I mean, I guess it's really sort of geared toward families and people with elderly parents, I guess, where you want to sort of keep track of people. Because it looked like the big selling point there is that they sort of advocate you using it without a phone, right? It's not really untethered. You have to have cellular with it for the features to work. And you're really only getting things like phone calls, text messages, a few other things that are going to work with that. So it's not like the full Apple Watch experience where I'm assuming maybe you can stream Apple Music. I don't know. But it just seemed like it was geared more toward a sort of a tracking device for kids or people who just didn't need all the functionality of a regular Apple Watch. Not exactly my use case. I don't really see myself caring about that all that much. But what did you guys think of that?
Well, I think one of the interesting things reading some of the developer talk is that the Series 3 is, at least from what Marco was saying, is the last 32-bit processor being actively sold by Apple. And so the SE kind of came in as it almost looks like it is the replacement. They meant for it to completely replace the Series 3, but they can't quite make the SE fit at the $200 price range. That $279 is as low down as they could get it. And it's almost kind of like we've had a $200 option for so long, we can't get the SE down that far, that quick. So we're just kind of go three range, because a lot of the developers were just, the watch developers were giddy that they didn't have to support the three anymore, that they could start go ahead and trying to phase it out. And now they don't have a choice. So they're still stuck with 38, 42, and then 40, 44 with the four different sizes that they have to mess with. And plus old complications compared to the new ones and everything else. It does seem kind of weird. I did find it weird that it has the S5 processor, but it did not have the always on display. I kind of like that. I know some of y'all really enjoy the always on. A lot of people do, but the display being off has never really bothered me with mine. It's one of the reasons I'm sticking with my Series 4 that my wife got me. She's got a 3 and I have a 4. And she has no real complaints with her 3 so far. And my 4, it's got the bigger screen. And battery life is still sensational. Even for as long as I've had it, I forget how many months I've had it now, I can go all day. I wear my Apple Watch every night to sleep for sleep tracking, even though they've added the sleep tracking. Maybe I'll get more detailed stuff now. But between Sleep Plus Plus and Auto Sleep, I've always gotten good results with my 4. But yeah, I'm kind of with you, Brian. It's the SE's. It's almost just kind of like their hand was rushed a little bit. And they're like, well, we need to do it, but we just can't hit the price range, so we'll run three watches.
I do appreciate the fact that the Series 6 has an A14 Bionic in it. That's kind of a unexpected, I don't know, it almost seems like overkill for what the watch has been capable of historically. So I'm hoping it's a lot snappier than what it used to be, even so far as the Series 5. And, of course, it has the ultra-wide chip that the iPhone 12 Pro has. So maybe we'll be able to unlock our cars with it in the future or do some other neat thing. I don't think we've used the ultra-wide in the iPhone 12 Pro all that much for anything, have we?
They may be doing more on-device, you know, computation, too, with workouts and whatnot, especially with the new services that are coming down the pike. Sorry to bury the lead.
Ah, yes. That could be a good point. So let's move on to the iPads. Let's start with the 8th generation iPad. Does anyone give a crap about the 8th generation iPad? Because it seems
not,
like a real
not so dud. Much.
I mean, it just seems like actually, a chip bump, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just a chip bump, and it was running, the 7th gens were running an A10, and the new ones come out with the A12, and from what I can understand, there's not really any other changes. I do have an interest in it because my daughter is back in the market for an iPad. She got her first real jobby job this summer, and she's kind of like what me and my wife told her, this is the only time in your life that you're not going to have any expenses and 100% disposable income. Go enjoy it for the months while it lasts, because when you get to college, you've got expenses, and congratulations. She got herself a Switch with her first bit, and she's really thinking hard about getting an iPad. And for what she would want to do, a base model iPad would do just fine. The only stickler is that 329 entry point still only has 32 gigs of storage, which is criminal in this day and age for any Apple product. The 128 gig model, that's all the 8th gen comes in, is 32 or 128 on storage. It is 429. And really for her, for what she's going to use an iPad for, that 429 is perfect. If you go up to an iPad Air, it starts at $600. And of course, the pros, I think, start at what, $700, $800? I think it's $800 now for the pros. So really for a 429 for that one, for what she wants to use it for, would be perfect. She just needs a standard tablet and would just kind of like it for music reading for her trumpet, and, you know, browsing stuff online, watching Netflix in a bigger window than her phone, that kind of stuff. But no, I think for any of us, or for most users, the 8th gen iPad's just okay. Congratulations.
And, you know, Amazon will discount that thing fairly quickly, because whenever they and Apple worked everything out, they do offer some usually $50 off, $25 off incentives. I'm sure Target will do the same thing, especially when you get around Black Friday. And since these won't be available, I don't know if the 8th gen is available now, or is October like the Air will be. Oh, no, it comes out Friday. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, $329 is kind of high. I would argue the 32 gig, for the type of person that's going to buy a regular iPad, I don't see them maxing the thing out. I mean, for most things you can stream, I don't know.
Most people don't have 100 gigs of music on their iPad.
We're not all you, Jim.
See, that still blows me away. As many music services as you have, to have as much local music on your device, it boggles the mind, especially in a pandemic time where you're not going anywhere. You have plenty of time to just stream away.
I have it set to auto download anything I add new, so it just automatically ends up on there.
So basically you're just filling your device for the sake of filling your device.
But I see an album and I add an album and I see an album and I add an album.
Look at you, mister. I have 500 gigs of apps on my iPhone.
I think that was a glitch in Overcast. So that's a beta version of Overcast that I've been running. And I'm sitting in my doctor's office and I go to do updates, right? And it can't update Outlook because there's not enough space on device. And I'm like, I have a 512 gig iPhone. There is no way. And I go into the settings and it's like, yeah, you've used all but like 384 megs on your phone. I'm like, how? And then I go and I look and it's like, I think it downloaded every podcast in the history of podcasts. So I had to delete the beta version of Overcast, reinstall it, and tell it to stream. Oh, wow. For the most part. So
I bet that could have burned some people on some downloads if they were on cellular.
Yeah, that would have been bad if I had a limited plan, but yeah, that was kind of rough. But I think for most folks, I think 32 gigs, I would agree it's on the low side. It's still arbitrary that they even do it. But I think for somebody who's paying 200 something, you know, when it's all said and done and they get their discounted iPad, they're probably not going to fill that up. Now, remember, we have app slicing and all that other stuff that Apple implemented that's supposed to keep the storage efficient. I notice a lot of times I get the offloading where things will be sent to iCloud instead. What they really want you to do is subscribe to iCloud, is really what it is. Like, if you have sufficient iCloud space, it's not usually an issue, but that's how they get you.
I was going to say, another cool thing that Amazon does on top of the discounts is they'll do that 6 months no interest financing.
So
if you want to, you know, split it into six payments, you can certainly do that too.
Oh, that reminds me. I finally told my wife about our iPad. We had a good chuckle.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's so very funny.
So for listeners who may not know, my wife is the type of person who's very, when it comes to technology, likes to ride technology till the wheels fall off. Like, same with cars, same with iPads, same with phones. She's still rocking an iPhone 8. And her iPad was so painfully slow, right? I got her in 2018, I got her an iPad Mini 4, which was the latest at the time, but it came out in 2015. So the processor was already 4 years old or 3 years old when we got it. And by 2019, it was really slow. So when the iPad Mini 5 came out, Amazon had a good deal. they knocked a little bit off the top. But they had the 6 months. You know, you could just do the same recurring payment, so it was easy to sort of money launder it, so she wouldn't notice. And I went in there and got her new iPad.
Money laundering
while she was at work. I went ahead and reformatted it, reinstalled it, put it in the same case. She's been using it for like a year and some change. Never noticed. So you have a near death experience, and you're like, well, you know, maybe I should, you know, maybe maybe I should just sort of be honest about some of this stuff. It doesn't really matter.
Come clean.
Yeah, come clean about something. So, by the way, I got you a new iPad last year, and you never knew. And that really caught her off guard, and she had a good laugh over that. We had a good chuckle.
Hey, do you remember that credit card charge for Ashley Madison? That was me.
All right, so Brian, I want to go back and touch on one thing that you said, right? You said that you didn't feel like at $329 it was a value. So I'm going to go old school on you, right? The original iPad was a turd. Now, it was way advanced for its time. But I think it came out at $499 for like an 8-gig model, okay? And really, the only thing it had going for it was, you know, Safari was awesome, you know, for the time. And there were a few apps, right? Like, you know, you had Twidlater and...
It was like a brick that ran like 800 by 600 resolution or something stupid. And
right. So then let's talk about what you're getting here, right? You're getting a iPad that is essentially... two iPad Pro series ago processor, right? You're getting Apple Pencil support. What you're getting for $329, so yes, that is not the device for me. I have no need for it, right? But I look at, say, my brother-in-law and sister-in-law, right? We've got a nephew who's about to be 16 and a niece who's 14, another niece who's 12, right? So for a grand, or even, you know, less than that, because they'll get the educational discount, right? For $900, they can all walk into the Apple store and all walk out with a really cool device. Now, it's more of a consumption device, not a creation device. But if they do, you know, and again, I won't talk about all the cool services that are available until we get to that topic. But, you know, with some of the family plans and the iCloud options that are out there, a family like that could really take advantage of that. Or even if you go younger than that, right? You know, one kid's got soccer and the other two are going to spectate, right? So, you know, everybody kind of has a device for the car. Everybody has a device for the stands. You know, now with so much distance learning because of COVID, $329 is a price that I think most families could afford at least one for the household to be shared. So I think kudos to Apple for what they are offering in that price range.
And it'll be a perfect iPad for my mom to replace the aging one that I got her. So I have a feeling that'll be a nice Christmas present for her, since I think she's still on iOS 10 or 11. She hasn't been able to upgrade in forever.
Yeah, my stepdad got a new one last year, and he'd been rocking a really old one. And so when he got that one at, I think, Thanksgiving last year when we were there, man, I mean, he loved it. You know, it was fast and the screen was great. I mean, and that's his primary computer. And so, you know, there's no way I would, you know, could go with it. You know, but I think for most people, it's not a, you know, not an awful deal. And I mean, 300 something bucks is, you know, still a lot of money for people. And I think for most folks, their phone does everything they need, especially if, you know, they splurge for the plus model on the phone. You've almost got a small iPad at that point. It is a good, I think what Jason was saying, you know, buy it for your three kids device, you know, who may not be old enough to have phones yet. You know, it's nice that they're able to have that device.
Let's talk about the iPad Air, which actually is a pretty tempting device for me, who skipped out on the last iPad Pro and this current iPad Pro. Having an A14, it's basically an iPad Pro without the ProMotion screen and the quad speakers. Quad speakers I could live without, because I don't really watch a lot of stuff where I'm not counting on the built-in speakers of an iPad to give me some sort of surround sound experience. The ProMotion I would miss.
The speakers in this new 12.9 I got are nuts. It's crazy how loud the speakers in this iPad can get. I was kind of a little shocked myself. Because I had an 11 before, you know, like it was 2 years old. This new one, I mean, it's crazy.
I will say the speakers on the 12.9 iPad Pro are third and fourth gen are really, really impressive. There's a lot of times at lunch I'll watch movies or TV at lunch in my office. And yeah, if I put the AirPod Pros in, they sound a little better. But yeah, the iPad Pro speakers sound way better than they have any right to. They are really impressive.
Well, now that we have spatial audio in the AirPods Pro, who cares, right? I mean, it's not that big a deal. Supporting the second gen Pencil is kind of a big deal for the Air. I mean, really, this is 3/4 of an iPad Pro.
Yeah, it's like a Pro Air. Pro, something
Pro
like
Junior.
That.
So it's, you know, for a moment I was kind of tempted. I don't think I'm going to end up going that way. I've waited this long. I might as well just hold off for the Pro whenever that gets refreshed, probably next spring. My current iPad Pro, which is in 2017, earlier this year, of course, I had the battery replaced. It's still not working right. Like if I unplug it and don't use it for a day, it's dead. So I gotta call Apple back and say, hey man, I paid $99 for this, and you didn't deliver. You just delivered me another dud. So, but yeah, I'm gonna hold off for that. But the iPad Air looks really, really compelling. I could see a lot of people who don't want, you know, the 12.9. I saw a thread on Twitter where people were saying like, why would you ever buy an 11-inch iPad Pro? It's too small. I disagree with that vehemently. Like, I think that's not a bad size for being able to do what I need to do. Even on my 10.9 or whatever it is that I have for the 2017, I've never really felt all that constrained for the things that I do, whether it's drawing, whether it's typing, whether it's watching something. Am I sort of in the minority on that or what?
No, I don't think so. I liked my 11, but basically I was kind of in the market for maybe going to a new laptop. And what I decided to do is kind of just keep my old MacBook Pro here and kind of make it, you know, my little server here at the house. And instead of buying a new laptop, that's why I went with the 12.9. And so if I ever do start traveling again, you know, that's my personal machine when I travel. That's not my work machine. And plus, my eyes are not what they used to be. So I am really appreciating the 12.9. You know, it is when you first get it, you're like, wow, this is, you know, really big. But then you get used to it, and so now when I do, I still have my 11 that I have to sell. You know, when I do pick that one up, I'm like, wow, you know, because even the 11 is big compared to a you know, a normal iPad. And so, you know, I think it's just kind of just what you're into. I think with the Magic Keyboard, the 12.9 is probably better just because you've got a little more room for typing and it's not quite as cramped. You know, it's more like a regular Magic Keyboard, you know, like for the Mac size versus maybe a little bit smaller keys for the 11. And that was one of the reasons I went ahead and moved up. But the primary reason was just, you know, bigger screen for watching, you know, movies and stuff. And, you know, it basically a laptop replacement. So I went ahead for the biggest size.
So I recently, this morning, went and grabbed my iPad Pro 12.9, whatever one generation back is, to go ahead and update it to iOS 14. And, you know, kind of like Jim said, man, I mean, the screen is so beautiful on that thing. Like, you just pick it up, you know, just laying there as an inanimate object, it looks big, right? But then when you put it in your hand, the screen comes on, those awesome speakers kick in, you know, you just feel like you're getting immersed in a high-def home theater that's in the palm of your hand. So I will say this. When I went in to buy my 12.9, granted, it's only 1.9 inches larger than the 11, but it looks so big compared to the 11 that when I was looking at the 11, I thought it was the mini.
Wow.
I had the same.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm also a 12.9, and I don't know I could ever see me going back to an 11-inch. I like the extra real estate. There's a lot of times I run split-screen apps, and having the extra real estate for it's very nice. And like Jim, and I also wanted a laptop replacement, and it with my Bridge keyboard, it is a laptop replacement for me. All that being said, there's a reason the 11-inch is the size that's across all the lines. It's the reason you can find an 11-inch in the Air, the OG, and the Pro. It's because it really is just the perfect size in a lot of ways for the tablet. It's the 11-inch is just fine. And there's plenty of people that use the iPad Pro 11-inch as a Magic Keyboard. You wouldn't think it's that much of a weight difference, but you take the 11-inch with the Magic Keyboard and the 13-inch with the Magic Keyboard, there's a decent weight difference with that. And if you carry around a backpack every day, it can make a difference. I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people love the little MacBook Adorable, the little 12-inch that they had, and it's why a lot of people love the 11-inch MacBook Airs, is because it's smaller and it's less to carry around with. So no, you're not crazy for loving the 11-inch. There's a lot of people that prefer that. But using it as a laptop replacement like Jim, I like the extra real estate for everything.
It's got some heft to it. With that Magic Keyboard, the 12.9, it's a pretty heavy. I mean, it's probably heavier than this crappy Dell that I have for work. But you know, I can't see like Megan would never want to use an iPad this big. It's, you know, just too big to hold and look at. I mean, she's got an iPad mini and she loves it.
My wife's the same way. She won't use anything other than an iPad mini.
So, I mean, you know, there's definitely use cases out there, but you know, if you've got to carry around another big laptop, then that's kind of why I went with the 11-inch, because I had another, you know, I had my big iPad Pro that I was generally going to have with me as well. But now, you know, with just this, it's the 12.9.
I had the 12.9 in 2015, and reading things, holding it above my head, and accidentally dropping it on my face a couple of times sort of soured me on it, but I may give it another shot. Let's see. Oh, one of the things I wanted to talk about, we're about to talk about iOS 14. One of the things that bugged me about the 12.9 was that there was all this unused white space. And I'm hoping that iOS 14 addresses that. Are you guys seeing that, or is there still a lot of wasted space on the 12.9, even with iOS 14?
Really, so far, sadly, nothing's changed. The biggest Apple, what in the world are you doing, is the fact that on iOS 14 on iPhones, you can place widgets anywhere on any screen you want on the home screen. On the iPad OS 14, you can only still put widgets on the left side of the first panel of your home screen and nowhere else. And that is the biggest.
That's awful.
Why in the world would you do that? You have all these beautiful widgets. You're pushing it with third-party developers. It's the first real chance you've told people, go get turned loose with Swift UI and make beautiful things. And it's going to restrict itself to one tiny little column on one screen of my iPad that I have to scroll up and down for, that I can't even see more than three stinking widgets at a time. It's ridiculous.
Do you think they'll fix it with like 14.1 or 14.0.1? You know, is that something we'll have to wait?
I would love to see them release another major release for 14.1. Unfortunately, I could see this being one of the 10% of the 90-10 Apple. You know, my thing with Apple that I've always told people is that they're a 90-10 company. 90% of the time, the decisions they make are brilliant and stupefying, and man, why does not everybody do that? The other 10% of the decisions are, you are the dumbest people in the world and the most stubborn I've ever dealt with, and they will not change it. I could see them saying that, well, our vision for the iPad is that these widgets should only be on the left. And meanwhile, you have all this white space and extra space on the home screen for it. It's ridiculous.
It would make a badass like dashboard, like sit it over here while I'm working on my other computer and have a big weather widget and a big, like, you know, whatever in the evening, you know, could have a scores widget, and you could have you know, a calendar widget, like literally like a dashboard of your apps, you know, that you want to see things on. And that would be so awesome on that big 12.9 inch screen. And nope.
Do you remember the old app on iPad called Status Board from Panic? way back in the day.
Yep.
This is the chance to build static board that every single app on your iPad can interact with. It can make widgets for it. They just got to make a widget. You could put them all over the place. And yet here we are. It is terrible. Now, I will say this. I finally put 14 on my iPad this afternoon, and Scribble's legit. My handwriting is terrible. I'm not a doctor. I play one on the internet, and I've got the handwriting of a doctor. And it even writing URLs in Safari, just thinking of things off the top to scribble in. Yeah, it translated them and loaded up the site immediately. I was extremely impressed with it. It even reads my godforsaken cursive. Now, there are a couple letters that messes up here and there, and I've got to be a little more deliberate writing cursive. But so far, playing with URLs, writing them in Scribble, it did fantastically. That's something I am really looking forward to using.
I haven't played with that much. I actually had to try to get through I was getting on my iPad to get onto a WebEx today, and it popped up that screen, don't you want to try Scribble? And I couldn't get it off the screen without actually writing something and clicking okay, I'm done. I tested it out. But I was trying to get into a WebEx for work when it actually prompted me to test it out.
So iOS 14, let's talk about that. Apple sort of annoyed the devs by giving 24 hours notice that it was going to be released along with watchOS 7 and tvOS 14. Of course, we know that they had to do that. This is the first time it's ever happened without having a corresponding iPhone to ship with it. But since watchOS 7 is tethered to iOS 14, they really didn't have any choice. And if watches are going to go out on Friday, now then again, I mean, you could play devil's advocate and say, look, there's been 8 betas since June. So this is, we're practically almost October. So it's not this is the first beta and then, we're releasing it. But understandably, devs were still kind of annoyed because they thought they had probably until October. But they should have seen the handwriting on the wall when watchOS 7 is coming out. You know, if you're having an event to announce watches, what have they always done? They've always tied watchOS to iOS. So you can't have one without the other. And if one's getting a bump, then the other one's getting a bump, which kind of annoying, but should have been a little bit predictable, I would think.
Well, one of the problems with the devs with all of that is in the past, generally they announce and they'll release the Gold Master a week before the actual release.
True.
And the kicker with that is that when you have not only the iOS 14 Gold Master, you also have the Xcode Gold Master to be able to compile and submit the apps with.
Ah.
So you had all these devs that had less than 24 hours if they wanted to get their stuff ready on day one for a 14 update, that they had to download the Xcode GM, which they uploaded the wrong one to begin with. And after about 30 minutes, they had to, it was 12A48, and then they stealth released 12A49. You had to have the new GMX code to be able to submit your apps for 14. And it's one of those where, yeah, I doubt much changed between Beta 8 and the Gold Master, but still, you've got to scramble to get your devices updated to GM, run your code on the GM, get the Xcode GM going, do your testing, then get it uploaded to Apple. Pray to God that you pass through app review in a hurry. And some did. Some are still stuck in app review hell. And, hope that you can pull all this off in less than 24 hours to have your stuff ready on day one if that's what you wanted. I think that was the big annoyance with a lot of them is just when you've got a week to get that done, okay, I can sleep tonight. And a lot of these devs just said, well, I guess I'm not sleeping tonight so I can make sure I'm on the App Store in time.
I waited 24 hours to upgrade to iOS 14 and watchOS 7 just to see if any of you guys had any problems first. And I didn't hear anything, so I was like, okay, I'll take the plunge. But I haven't really customized anything. What are your impressions, folks? What do you think?
I just want to say that was my first thought when you were in the hospital for just more than, after about a week or so. And I think a point release came out. And I'm like, Brian is going to come out of this soon because there's no way he can go more than 24 or 48 hours without installing a point release. And I joke with the guys on Telegram about it. I'm like, if they're not letting him update his phone, if he is awake, or iPad or whatever you were using. I think you said you were using FaceTime, and I was just like, this is going to be a problem.
So you're going to laugh, but we'll go off topic for just a second. My wife insisted on bringing me my iPad with its crappy battery life. So while I'm there, I was considered a fall risk, so I couldn't even get out of bed or move to a chair without a nurse being in the room or I set off this massive alarm. So my iPad constantly dying, I was constantly having to get the nurse to plug it in next to my life support back there. Hey, could you move this plug? Thanks so much. You know, so it wouldn't die. The Wi-Fi at Emory is impossible for patients to connect to. Maybe I was just whacked out of my mind on leftover fentanyl. I don't know. But I could not for the life of me connect. I saw there was an update. It was driving me nuts because you can't update over cellular. So it wasn't until my wife.
I knew it.
So I'm going to let you guys behind the curtain. I may or may not edit this out. But because I was a little loopy, you know, you come out of that ICU delirium, I was saying some crazy, crazy nonsense, right? I was talking a lot of crazy smack. My wife was kind of like, I don't know if I should give him his phone because there's no telling what he might tweet or Facebook or do whatever else. Even though for some reason she thought the iPad was okay, but she ended up bringing me the iPhone at some point. So it was towards the end of my stay of 5 weeks, and the first thing I did was make a hotspot on the phone, update the iPad, then make a hotspot on the iPad and update the iPhone. Actually, you know what? I think my iPhone updated itself, so I think it may have been up to date by the time, or at least it already had it downloaded by the time she brought it to me. My phone was at least being good, waiting for me to come back. But my iPad, yeah, that was, I ended up having to do that. So that was,
that's just hilarious. You
knew,
I knew it.
You knew me too well, Jim. But anyway, what are your impressions of iOS 14 and watchOS 7? Let's go around the room.
All right. So from my perspective, iOS 14, I've been running the beta for like the last couple of betas. So I've been a little bit used to it already. A lot of the developers need to update their apps for it. Like I've got some weird quirkiness, even with the, Gold Master or the final release, whatever you want to call it. So for instance, if I try to share a picture out of any app and share it with Telegram, it gives me phantom orphaned messages that don't send, right? Like, I don't know where that came from, but whatever. I do like some of the UI refinements, right? So I like it when you're in an app and your phone rings that it doesn't take over the app. You get the little status bar across the top if you want to accept it or not. I also like that when you do accept it, if you hit the button to see your audio choices, right? That refinement of showing you your HomePod, your speakerphone or whatever other headset options you have to switch your audio to, it's just kind of like a nice refined touch. In email, the mark all is red and whatnot, or select all, that looks a little bit nicer. I do like some of the widgets. Brian, I know, has for years harped on us about using Siri shortcuts. So I actually created kind of four things that I use a lot, which is arrive at home. So that, unlocks the door and turns on the foyer lights and the front porch. And then I've got like a good night that, shuts everything off at the end of the evening, locks the front door, all that good stuff. And then one for finding my keys on tile, and the other's calling my wife, right? So it's nice to have four things that I do very frequently to be able to just hit those. The other thing is that I like is one of the accessibility options is you can set it to do commands based on two taps on the back of the phone or three taps on the back of the phone. So I have three taps to the back of the phone as unlocking the house and running through my get home process. Because a lot of times what happens is when I do get home, I got a backpack on one shoulder and I got a Yeti in one hand and I got something else, and typically my phone is in the other hand. So instead of having to say, "Hey lady, unlock the front door," I can just, rapidly triple tap the back of the phone and everything will come on for me. So those are kind of some of the couple days in refinements that I really like about iOS 14.
I like the new widgets. They're fun. I've moved some around on a couple of different home screens, and I have the ones that are sort of matching in what, I kind of group my home screens into sort of productivity or activities. So I'll have widgets that are appropriate to what apps are on that home screen. I do have an annoyance about the new text or the message app. The way it used to, if you, I have the filter turned on to where it doesn't put unknown numbers in your main feed, in your main message feed. Well, on the, on 13 and previous versions, you had two tabs at the top and you had your known senders and your unknown senders. And now those are on a separate page. But when they were on two tabs, you'd have a new message under unknown. You could quickly see, oh, I've got one new message or two new messages from, like, you know, an SMS MFA type notification, or somebody has given your number to somebody and it's like, hey, this is Aunt June and I need help with my computer. Well, I might not see the message for 2 days now because that tab isn't up there telling me you've got two unknown senders or whatever. So I'd have to remember to go back and look at those. Otherwise, I've been really happy with 14. It's been pretty cool so far. I'm not sure what to do with the app library just yet. It hasn't revealed its usefulness to me yet.
So one other thing I forgot to mention, I really love in the clock app when you're setting your alarm that you don't have to use the scroll day and date and all that. You can just type in 7:00 for AM and, you know, it'll set your clock that way.
So for me, the widgets are really cool. The updates to the home screen, I'm pretty OCD about my home screen. So it's going to take me a while to figure out exactly how I want to set up. But what I did do is normally I have like a bunch of apps on the first page, and then the second page is just a bunch of folders with all the other apps in them. And so what I did is I just removed all those folders on the second page, and I'm just using the app, you know, the pre-made folders now for basically anything that doesn't have an icon, you know, directly on the home screen. I've just got to go to the app folders to get it, and that's working out okay. You know, I waiting to see, you know, what other kind of widgets we get for certain apps. That'll be nice. Right now, I put a weather app like widget on the second tab, and the first tab is still all icons. I will say, when you try to move those widgets around and stuff, it could really wreck all the icons if you had them any kind of particular order. It's not really good about playing nice with the ones you already have there, so you have to watch for that. But yeah, I mean, I like the, I don't know what they're calling it, but just like the reduced size of like phone calls and Siri and that kind of thing. Like, you don't get like the big, huge, like if you get a phone call or whatever, you know, it doesn't take up your whole screen. You know, you just kind of get the little warning at the top. That's kind of nice. So yeah. And I have gotten a couple of like, privacy sort of, this app wants to use this sort of message, in there, and I'm just like, why does that app want to do that? And I'm just like, no. Oh, Brad. He, she, this is just adorable.
Yes, that dog is.
Well, she's Nora a is she. Adorable. Her name's Nora.
Brad has his dog podcasting. What about you, Josh? iOS 14?
Yeah, you know, since I installed Watch OS 7 and iOS 14 last night and got wrapped up with Rocket League with the kids and didn't check them out too much. Today, I updated my iPad. Once Ferrite's update came out, I went ahead and updated my iPad to 14. And other than the Scribble, I haven't really played around with a lot of stuff. Now, I will say what Jim was talking about, and Jason as well, when Siri and your phone comes in, the fact that it's basically the size of a little notification bar coming across the top, that is very nice. And it was actually kind of a little weird. I was on a phone call and I'm like, oh, wow, I can still use the app. I can still do what I'm doing while I'm on the phone. That's really kind of nice. And was able to swap it off a speaker and swap it onto speaker. It was really nice. I have noticed that, say, for instance, like I was trying to do the other night when I was copying a picture out of Google Images and pasting it into a Telegram chat. Whenever I go to copy and paste, there is a little notification that comes across the top that goes, Telegram has pasted into Safari, or Safari has copied and copied from Safari, pasted into Telegram. So you actually get a visual notification that information from one app has pasted, copy and pasted to another. It's one of the things that got, what was it, TikTok and Facebook and a lot of these in trouble, where the betas were saying, hey, this app is trying to copy your clipboard a lot. And that's going to be a really nice feature, I think. I know that, another feature that I'm sure is in is, now if you're overly privacy conscious, it'll do MAC address spoofing and scrambling. And every time you connect to a Wi-Fi router on your iPhone and your iPad, it will scramble a generic MAC address to where they can't even trace you off of it every time you connect to a different one. It works very well because we have a MAC sniffer on my home network, and my son decided to do that to get around our Circle device so he could use his phone after hours. And kept wondering why his Brady's 3DS kept showing up every couple of hours on the Circle. A new device has been added to your network, and well, that's why he was doing the MAC scrambling to get around it.
Clever kid.
Oh yeah, exactly. A little too clever sometimes, but I think that's a good thing. And kind of like you said, I'm waiting for Federico's review and some of the other big reviews to come out for it, just to show us all the in-depth stuff. Probably still going to be a few weeks. I know that was one of the things that he was stressing over, was just he's just not got enough time to get it done. And it it's kind of like everybody's told him, dude, look, your review doesn't have to come out day one. It'll when it's ready, it's ready, and we'll read it then, and we'll learn a lot when it comes out.
Similar to the copying data from one app to another, that little notification, there's the notification about where your audio is going whenever you connect a new device. So whenever you fire up some music, it'll pop up and say, you know, this is being played through Brad's AirPods Pro. So that lets you know, like in that there's some movie where a guy was watching porn and he's like, well, I'm not getting any sound. And like his friends are outside swimming in the pool and it's, you know, playing porn sounds out of the giant.
That was the Netflix TV show Love. I saw that episode. That was a very funny and humiliating episode.
That's what it was.
So, yeah. Oh, speaking of privacy, even though Big Sur is not out for the Mac yet, the new version of Safari is, so you'll probably see that as an update push to macOS if you haven't seen it already. I went ahead and installed that, and it's nice. It's showing you how many sites it's protecting from tracking you. It they're gonna make us some real enemies in the ad business. So that's good for us.
Well, you guys saw that screenshot I took earlier today of Safari on iPhone, where when I went to a site and it popped up, you know, like, did it want to use my iCloud user ID or whatever? It came up and was like, hey, the password you're using for this site has known to be compromised. Do you want to go ahead and change it now? So I thought that was pretty cool. So it's one of the few sites where I do actually reuse a password. And, you know, if anybody wants to log in and ship me ammo, feel free to do that, because it was a gun ammo site. So, but I did really appreciate that kind of security notice. I think the more it pops up for people who don't understand how important it is to not reuse passwords across multiple sites, that might actually make some traction in securing more devices out there.
The CNN homepage has 37 trackers on it, by the way.
If you use Facebook on iOS 14 too, the first time you launch it, after upgrading, it's like, Facebook wants to use Bluetooth to find other devices on your network. It's like, yeah, I don't think so. No thanks.
So I figured out why I needed to do that today. So, because I initially said no, and then I got a notice, like the UFC press conference for the upcoming fight this weekend was happening. And so I wanted to, I've got a Sony TV that uses screencast. So I was trying to Google cast it or whatever from the Facebook app to the TV. And the minute that I tried to do that, it was like, hey, you've got this locked down. You really have to enable, you know, network discovery and Bluetooth to be able to utilize this feature. So that was a case that you know, it needed to do that.
There is a new warning on 14.2 for trying to access devices on your local network. So I using my QNAP at home, I open up the QNAP iOS app called Q Manager, and it says, "Do you want to access? You know, do you want to allow this app to access your local network?" And if you tell it no, and then you try to connect to, you know, any pre-configured QNAPs in your Q Manager, it won't let you connect. So then you have to go back into the app settings and enable that. But there are plenty of apps like network scanners and other things that will not work unless you tell it yes.
Yeah, I just updated mine like this afternoon when I walked in there. I'm like, I better check it. And sure enough, I checked and it hadn't updated. You know how TV OS is kind of hit and miss with that. So I ran the update on mine, but I hadn't actually went back in there since it ran.
So, Dr. Hoagie, are you having the same issue that I'm having with a Unify Protect app on Apple TV?
Actually, I have not. We don't have any cams in the house currently at all, so I don't. I don't have Unify Protect on my Apple TV. But, you know, kind of like I said, we were having that Eufy discussion earlier, and you know, kind of I'm sure we'll talk about Eufy some, the Eufy cams in the next episode, and the pros and cons on a lot of that. But no, I haven't tried the Unify Protect on my Apple TV yet.
Gotcha. For some reason, I thought you had it. So, the problem that I'm having is, on tvOS 14, the Unify Protect, application is not seeing my, Unify controller. So I don't know what's going on there. I logged in through a web browser to make sure that there was like a tunnel back. The web browser for when you log into Unify itself, like I think it's like ubnt.unify.com or whatever, it can see my controller over the internet. So I don't know. I'm just hoping it's some kind of glitch with tvOS 14. And like I was kind of almost expecting like a warning that says, hey, this needs to discover stuff on your network, kind of like on the iPhone does. But I never got any kind of warning. And anyhow, so I'll give an update on the next show as to what it takes to get that working.
Good deal. Well, this is a good stopping point. So until next time, later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.